Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association Blog Talk Radio. I am your host this evening, speaking to you live from Washington, D.C., Bilal Masadiq Bynum, along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Greetings, and assalamu alaikum to you, Brother Bilal.
Okay, and to all of our audience, that greetings go out. So, Brother Aziz, good evening to you. We're going to, Brother Aziz, this evening in our listening audience, Juneteenth, you know, we know is Monday, but we won't have a show Monday, so we're going to do our Juneteenth presentations and conversations and talks. We're going to start tonight with the New Africa Black Belt, and we also go, so we're going to have an open mic as to where whatever one wishes to talk about as far as their Juneteenth or any experience they wish to talk about, the history of Juneteenth. And of course, you know, if you talk about the history of Juneteenth, you have to go back to slavery, because that's where you have to go back to when we was we left Africa. All of that is relevant. And and of course, we're going to talk also about, and all of you who knows the history of the Black Belt Business District and the famous Black Belt Wall Street. So with that said, welcome to the show. And Brother Aziz, we're going to open up with an appropriate theme song this evening that I think goes along with our title this evening. So giving our audience a chance to come on, we will open up with our theme song for the evening. And I said giving our audience a chance to come on and join us. So, Brother Ali, theme tune will come back, and we'll open up our show.
Okay.
I pray
on the right. Shaheen, and greetings to the audience and you, Brother Milan.
Okay, we're getting feedback because I'm opening up our mics so we can give our audience a chance to participate with us. So I'm going to ask the audience, until you're ready to speak, please put yourself on mute, but when you're ready to join us, just take yourself off mute, come right on in, and we're going to have a conversation for the next 2 hours. And, of course, we're going to be talking about the Juneteenth. We're going to start our Juneteenth celebration tonight because, of course, Monday we will not be on the air, and many of us will be at many programs and events that particular day. So New Africa Black Belt, a business association, we're going to start our conversation tonight on Juneteenth. And we also going to be, for those of you who know the history of the Black Belt Business District and the famous Black Belt Wall Street, we will welcome those conversations also. But at the same time, we're not going to limit anybody to talk about our topics. Whatever you comments you want to have as far as your celebration of your freedom or what we might consider freedom, we can certainly have that conversation tonight, and we look forward to it. So, like I said, Brother Aziz, I'm not going to take up a whole lot of time. I will make my little opening comments. Of course, when you start talking about when you start talking about coming to America or coming here as slaves, America before we was America, or before there was before we was colonized, I put it that way, America was considered the black soil. That's what most of the Europeans considered the Americas to be, the black soil. And of course, the black soil is the fields, the earth, the farms, and that black soil and those farms ran all the way from Texas to throughout the South all the way to Virginia, but you have to include Delaware and Maryland because that's where the highest concentration of all the slaves that was brought into this country, that's where they were placed, in the South. And that black soil is what the production from the black soil and the free labor that this country got from those our brothers and sisters who they bought here as they captured and was forced into slavery, made this country and the production that what we produce from our free labor made the United States what we know today to be the United States, the most richest country in the entire world. And and that wealth still stands with this country today. And as we can see, not only America the richest country in the world, but it is our dollar bill now that stimulates the dollar power of the world. So you can see how powerful we are as African Americans, even though our power show for those that we might start off saying was our slave masters, but we can certainly say the white supremacists that still run this country today. So that black soil again, which ran all the way from Texas to throughout the South, to include Maryland and Delaware, again the highest concentration of where all of our slaves were put when they was put here in the United States, and of course we know about the slaves, the slavery that continued even in the Caribbean and other parts, but again, it was America that reached the power of slavery and benefit from the power of slavery. So that's my opening remark this evening, Brother Aziz. I am going to let you make some comments, and then we will go over to any of our other directors. But then, like I said, we're going to open our mics up. We'll ask you. Sister Sicer with us this evening. Looks like I can see her number. Sister Sicer, are you with us this evening? No, I guess Sister Sicer's not. I thought maybe I saw her with us. But in any case, Brother Aziz, you're a comrade. I'm sorry, Sister Sicer, are you with us? I thought I heard a voice, but I guess I didn't. But
I heard something also.
Yeah, but if she comes on, she'll make her presence known. We will go and see. I'm sorry. Again, Sasha, is that
you? Sister Aisha is with you earlier.
Okay.
Sister Aisha.
Sister Aisha, now I'm switching over to you right now. Am I speaking with you?
Assalamu alaikum. Good evening, everyone. This is we're breaking up on my side a little bit. I hear a lot of static in the background.
I was trying to eliminate it. I'm opening the mics up, and some of our listeners may have some activities in their backgrounds, but hopefully, like I said, you're ready to join in on our conversation, take yourself off mute. I am going to open the mics up so you can join in with us. We're just introducing our state directors at the moment, but as soon as our state directors come on, we'll go ahead and get our celebration. And I say it's a celebration because brothers and sisters, African Americans, you got much to celebrate. And I might say that all of the struggles we've gone through, when it comes to a people, boy, you can't be no more prouder than you can of the American Americans. Can't be no more prouder. So again, Brother Aziz, I will again welcome your comments. I will give and Sister Aisha, any of our other directors come on, and then of course we're going to just open our channels up to all of our listeners. Brother Aziz.
Yes, greetings. So I was just giving a little brief understanding of Juneteenth. You know, some of us celebrating it. Some of us say that we should be doing other things and celebrating. We should be protesting. Nothing has changed. And the history of Juneteenth, how it actually took place, it wasn't like once all of the African Americans in America were freed on that day. It was just that the people in the state of Texas were delayed their freedom in that. So, you know, a whole lot hasn't changed yet since that time in terms of the treatment of people. So I hope to have all the celebrations of that. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Brother Isaac. I'm going to just have to put some folks on mute because they're not going to cooperate with us. Brothers and sisters, you must cooperate if you want to participate with us. Hate to put you on mute where you won't be able to participate. So please respect the speakers and put yourself on mute if you can't hold back your conversation. But if you can, join us and come on in when you're ready to. But try to keep the noise down, please, because I would hate to put folks on mute tonight. I really want to celebrate with all of my brothers and sisters and welcome everybody's comments tonight. So, Brother Isaac, go right ahead.
Yes, one of the things that we know of the fact of how Juneteenth all came about. So, the celebrating of Juneteenth, it was, in 1865, the Confederate General, Gordon Granger, you know, he issued the proclamation claiming the freedom for the slaves in Texas. And then we know in 2021, I believe it was 2021, President Biden officially made it a holiday in which a great number of us African Americans didn't even know that Juneteenth was up for a holiday. And we think that a lot of us think that we need more than some type of holiday. For that observation, the people and ancestors in the state of Texas whose parents were slaves or living in Texas during that time period, they'll do something from the state of Texas itself, like some reparation for the families that can prove that their roots were there during that time period and file for some reparations to the state of Texas. You know, that's one of the things I think that should be taking place. But other than that, the different celebrations that's going on around, especially in the Washington metropolitan area, the different counties around in Maryland and Virginia, as well as D.C., are having all types of celebrations going on, as well as big barbecue cookouts and competition. We're having a D.C. barbecue cook-off this weekend coming up. So it's going to be a lot of activity going on around for us African Americans getting together. I don't know what we may get out of the Juneteenth besides the celebrating and everything, but it's a good time for us to try to come together and talk about promoting businesses, putting businesses in our communities, and supporting the ones that do exist in our communities. Because we know on Juneteenth, wherever we're having celebrations, we're going to have a lot of African-American vendors out there. But those vendors are just there for the celebration. But to have them somewhere in a brick-and-mortar type situation would be good, too, where that could be an ongoing business in the community. So we're looking forward to the Juneteenth celebration, but as I mentioned earlier, our brothers and sisters in Texas that have ancestors that were there during that time period, it, you know, it would be recommended that a petition be filed to the state of Texas for reparations for doing that to their people, you know, because, as I said, this holiday, I don't know what it does for us. I don't know what it does for us because it's the people in Texas that were freed, not the rest of us. The rest of us are people already running around free, but the people in Texas, they got the shaft put to them. So we hope that this can eventually come out to be that way, that we can get the reparations and that. Other than that, we know on the business side of things that right now business is are kind of on the downside because of what's going on with this President Trump's hearing and that, and you know, maybe he's going to get some of the things that he's going to, that should be put upon him. When you violate the law, as they say, then you have to pay the price. And with the things that he's done and that, they should pay the price. And I don't know why they're taking so long to come up with what they want to do to him and all of that. And one of my recommendations would be to them to, in order to come to find out what they wanted to do, just do what they would do if it was President Obama. If they were to do what they would do with President Obama, all this would have been over with, and we could have been about the things that's more important that's going on in the country now, like the homelessness situation. And this homelessness situation is an all-time high. It's real bad. So, you know, that's the thing that we should be addressing. So those are some of my opening comments for right now. And Brother Bilal, I'll turn it back to you to turn it over to our next director, Sister Aisha, if you don't have anything else to say.
Yes, we appreciate your comments, Brother Aziz. And again, for all of our listeners who are just coming on, welcome to our celebration this evening, the New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street. We're celebrating Juneteenth this evening. We're kicking it off this evening because we won't be back on the air until next Wednesday, and of course that would be after our celebration of Juneteenth. And I must say, I think it's a wonderful day. I think it's a wonderful day for African Americans to celebrate because, again, freedom. Freedom, as we know, and you was making an example, Brother Aziz, there of Donald Trump, but Donald Trump can prove to all of us, especially African Americans, that no, we realize we don't have 100% freedom, but we. We're realizing freedom compared to what we've been through. So I'll take what we can get, and I'll fight for getting even more until we do realize freedom. So like I said, our mics are all open, Sister Aisha. I know you're going to be taking over in another half an hour or so, but any comments you like to make as far as your opening comments, we welcome your comments. Sister Aisha, direct out of North Carolina. Sister Aisha. Okay, maybe she's going to come back with us a little later on. She may.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Yes,
thank you. Thank you very much, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz. It's a pleasure being here tonight. Here in North Carolina, we are very excited about the Juneteenth. And, of course, being a federal holiday, it's held throughout many of the states. The celebration is held throughout many of the states here in America. The greatest dilemma for me as far as celebrating Juneteenth is the recognition that the position of our people in this country, the African-American people, in many ways it has deteriorated greatly. I was doing a little research on the economics of the African-American right after the Emancipation Proclamation. And that we recognize that in the first 50 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, African-American black people had accumulated personal wealth of over $700 million. The literacy rate climbed from 5% pre-emancipation to 70% after emancipation in a matter of 50 years. That's a tremendous effort on the part of the emancipated slaves, especially when you consider that the life expectancy of the slave during that time was only 40 years. So this effort that took place, many of the slaves who participated in bringing about this economic effort, they didn't get a chance themselves to participate because of the low life expectancy. But however, they were doing it for the generation after them, and that's where they set their sights. So this Emancipation Proclamation has been over 158 years in the making, and I think that we should celebrate. I think we should celebrate our ability to continue to prosper, and we should actually continue to prosper. But oftentimes, looking at the situation with us in this country, it's kind of dismal when you consider that we know that we are 13 to 14% of the general population in this country. I'm talking about African American people. However, we represent 39 to 40% of the homelessness population in this country. And the families with children, the African American represent over 50% of that population. So it doesn't, I'm not encouraged by these numbers, and I don't see the progress that we are making as a highly educated group of people now, people with professional jobs, people with a lot of education, having gone through the HBCUs and the other institutions. I do not see that type of determination in our people today as there was 50 years after Emancipation Proclamation. So sometimes it's a little disheartening. And I wanted to say, Brother Aziz,
yes.
We know Texas didn't come on board right away. Also, New Jersey did not until 1866, a year after Texas. So, yes. And in Texas, there were over 250,000 slaves who were emancipated. So you have a very robust population in Texas. So these were the people that pushed forward to bring about economics for us, not just in Texas, but all over the U.S. So I would like if we can use this celebration in 2023 as a time to reflect. I think that we should get together with our friends and our family members and have a true celebration. But somebody, while we're celebrating, somebody have got to be sitting down making some plans on our economic, social, political stability in this country and how we're going to continue to move forward. So those are some of the concerns that I was having in reference to the Juneteenth celebration.
Sure. We look forward, like I said, Sister Aisha, we ask you to continue with us, and of course you'll be having your own show here in another half an hour or so. Brothers and sisters, our mics are open. At this time, I am going to, again, I don't know if your daughter came on. Sister Sasha, did you join us yet? Okay, I was going to, but in any case, I am going to open our mics up. Any comments that any of our listeners who are on the air with us at the present time, any comments that you like to make at this junction of our show, we certainly welcome your comments. Our mics are open.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
My name is Naomi Gatasisa. I am in Raleigh, North Carolina, and this is my first time joining this blog talk at the invitation of my dear friend Aisha. So I'm listening in. I heard her presentation. It's very interesting and informative historical information and statistics that she shared. I just want to say that I hear her concerns about our people as a whole. I have the same concerns. The only thing I would say here is in seeing the, our growth as a people having stalled so after emancipation, we know that it was by design. It wasn't something that they did necessarily. They were definitely progressive thinkers, they were producers, they were using their minds and their hearts to help move us as a people forward. But, you know, Shaitan put distractions and stumbling blocks and creates all kinds of schemes to take the human family off track. Allah puts us on track with the message from the prophets and from the messenger. But Satan has his plan. When you don't have a knowledge of that with all good intentions and good heart, but without having some understanding of the tricks and the schemes that have been put in place by those who are workers for the Satan, you know, those with satanic minds, those who want to stay in power, then it's difficult for you to fight. I mean, you fight to the best of your ability using what you have and what you know, and you make progress. But sometimes we don't understand and we don't always see Satan coming at us from all these different angles, as he promised that he would come at us from every position and lie in wait on the straight path. So he's lying in wait on the straight path. That means he's lying in wait on the path that righteous people choose to take. So he gets in that mix and starts create confusion and distractions and false understanding, misconceptions, and it throws us off. So it's a struggle all the time. It's a struggle. And we can't give up. We won't give up. We have good leadership in our leader, Imam Muhammad. He's given it and left us so much. We just have to study his methodology and study his study the Quran using his understanding and the way he explains Quran, and that will help us, because Allah's word is true, and we will reach the destiny. It's just a matter of our keeping our faith in Allah and working it's work that will get us there. So, and, you know, truth knocks the brain out of the falsehood. So truth will not prevail, never. So, but we have to do our part to work. So Juneteenth, like she said, is a time to sit down, yes, celebrate. But this is going to be my last point. Something that I recall in my understanding, Imam Muhammad has advised that when we have this time, you know, like these long weekends, you know, the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, or whenever these holidays come around, yes, you can observe them, but in whatever way, observe Juneteenth, but don't spend all your time frolicking and having a good time. Spend it sitting, developing plans and strategies, as the sister mentioned, how to address specific issues that are facing us. I was watching a show, and this was in Durham, I want to say, veterans who need food. I mean, the man said they used to get food during, you know, the pandemic and how all this extra money for food stamps, et cetera. But when they cut that thing off, you have men who have served in the military, families, who are hungry. So we have plenty of work to do. And our work is to serve humanity, and that's how we serve a lot. So we have a lot of things to do just from every angle. So thank you so much.
Yes.
And inshallah, I will listen in periodically. And may Allah bless you and reward you for this effort. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alaykum salam, sister. We appreciate your comments.
Thank
and you. I can't say just about everything you said, was you're just simply speaking the truth. But,
Naomi. If you'll excuse me, Brother Bilal, I wanted to mention to Naomi before she left. I want, Naomi, if you will be so kind as to give us an idea of the great work that your nonprofit is doing, not just in the state of North Carolina, but all over the country in historical preservation of the history. Of course, of the Muslim community, but it includes the total African-American community in many ways. And your relationship with the different museums and how you're inspiring groups to preserve the legacy.
Well, let me say this. Alhamdulillah, Sister Aisha. I'll start with my work with the State Museum. For over 20 years, I'm no longer on the advisory board, actually. I resigned as of December of last year. After another young sister who came on board and worked with me, now she has taken my place on the advisory board. But the state of North Carolina, of course, has its the State History Museum, as most states have. And Allah bless me to serve on the advisory board for the African American Cultural Celebration that takes place every year at the State Museum in an effort to highlight contributions of African Americans to the state of North Carolina. I served as chairperson for a subcommittee for that event, and the subcommittee was education and history. So this last year, we were blessed to be able to, the responsibility of each committee is to identify people in the broader community who have stories to tell, who can bring something to the event for the guests to learn about contributions of African Americans. And last year, the theme focused around education. So we were blessed to be able to identify four historic educational institutions in North Carolina. Now, this event, the draw before the pandemic, upwards to 10,000 people in a one day, that event for 11, from 11 to 4 in the afternoon. Over 10,000 people would attend that. Last year, I think the number got up to some like 6,000 plus, because the whole museum is transformed, all of its spaces transformed, where presenters are giving, be it art, culture, history, education, nutrition, you name it. It's just so many different areas are highlighted. And to make this short, last year we were able to, our subcommittee was able to highlight some historical educational institutions that have happened here in North Carolina. One in particular was the Clara Muhammad Schools that started out as the University of Islam. We were able to get three of the former principals of University of Islam and Clara Muhammad Schools to come in, and we did a presentation on the history of the schools in North Carolina and the contributions that schools have made. Then we had, I don't know if you're familiar with Laurenberg Institute. This is one of the prep schools that African Americans would attend in North Carolina prior to integration, because prior to public schools just being made available to African Americans. It was established back in the early 1900s. That's the only school. There were several prep schools. Laurenberg was one. Palmer Memorial Institute, which we once owned as a community up in Sedalia, was another one. Allen High School, African Americans didn't own that, but African American students went to that. There were several, some in South Carolina, but Laurenberg is the only standing institution that still exists that started back in the early 20th century, and they still are providing education. So we highlighted them. Mm-hmm. Then there was another school, Peabody Academy, in Montgomery County, North Carolina, in the county seat, Troy, small rural community. That was highlighted. So we were very blessed to end our work with the museum to present something around education. And over the years, we've been able to bring in Muslims to participate in the event, to showcase contributions that Muslim African Americans have contributed to the state of North Carolina. And that segues me into the work that I'm currently doing. I have to make the correction. I'm not really working to try to preserve the history of Muslim African Americans across the country. Our focus primarily is on the state of North Carolina, and it's a preservation project. It's called the North Carolina Muslim Communities of Imam W.D. Muhammad. For the past 5 years or so, we've been collecting oral histories and archiving documents, photos that will help tell the story about the history of the Muslim African American communities under the leadership of Imam Muhammad in the state of North Carolina. And we were very blessed to have at least two exhibitions. One, the last one was held at Duke University's campus in its main library on campus. It was there for about 5 months. That we co-curated that exhibit that went up in July and came down in December. And according to the exhibit librarian, some 15,000 people passed through that library every day. So that exhibit was available to all those people that would come through that library gallery. They could stop and view the exhibit and read and learn about our history. And the history was based on the establishment of what used to be Muhammad's Temple No. 34 in Durham, North Carolina, under the leadership of Imam Kenneth Muhammad. But it's now Arazak Islamic Center, and it was the first established Muslim community in the state of North Carolina. And so we're trying to preserve that and make people aware, not only the public, but our own self, our own community members in North Carolina. So that was that's generally the work that we've been doing, and we're still doing that. We're still collecting, and inshallah, we hope to have this be wrapping it up in December of this year, so that we have to identify a archival site where we can properly store this material. And I have to give a shout out to Imam Imam up in I can't think of his name. He wrote the book The Man Behind the Men. I can't think of his name, but anyway, he was my inspiration because he's done a similar thing in that state. Where is Judge Shaheed from? What's the name of that state? I can't think of the name of it, but he's the one that was inspiration to me, and I began to continue. I began this project after listening to him. So I'm going to have to stop now. I'm actually sitting at Costco getting my tire plugged, and they're calling me to tell me
okay.
my car's ready. Well, so I have to get out.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Naomi. And we hope you continue with the great work that you are doing for the state of North Carolina and throughout the nation.
Thank you so much.
Yes, definitely.
You all do the same. You all do the same. Assalamu alaikum.
And so, yes, brothers and sisters, again, our mics are open, and we welcome your comments. If you have any comments, we certainly welcome your comments at this time.
Yes, this is Brother Aziz. I wanted to make a comment towards the end statement that Sister Aisha had made when she was referring to us seeming like we were going back as opposed to making progress like some of our forefathers did right after slavery. And I think that what has happened is an article that I had read some years ago by Imam Wafdi Muhammad said it was about a freedom American style. And freedom American style is not the kind of freedom that our ancestors had right back after slavery, because the kind of freedom they had the freedom to be able to learn and to get up to compete, to be able to get the knowledge that the slave masters had and all that, because they knew that they could do that, and they strive hard and struggle hard and made landslide progress. Congressmen and senators and, you know, female millionaires. And what has happened is it's time progress, and our generations started getting more of this freedom American style. It was freedom to go in a direction where, it was, you know, it's freedom to do everything that would hurt you and not advance you. And that's what a lot of our people got tied up into, following the way of the world as opposed to staying on that course where, you know, we were trying to develop ourselves as a people individually, educating ourselves as our communities, better in our communities. We did have communities back in the 1800s all the way up until the 1960s. And then the community started kind of, we started enjoying that American freedom, American style. So that's what I think, Sister Aisha. It was just, it's just the freedom American style that has slowed our people's progress down, because it's the freedom to do every illicit, wrong, harmful thing to developing yourself individually as well as developing our communities, as we can see with all these epidemics that have been put intentionally into our communities, where other communities would not allow that type of vice to be in their communities at all. So I think that American freedom, American style, is what has harmed our people in making the progress that they should be making.
Freedom, American style. Freedom of American.
Yes.
Interesting, Brother Aziz. Elaborate just a little bit more on that freedom of American styles. Give me a a good definition of what order, because that's interesting. Freedom of American style,
yeah,
well, and that resonates with me. Give me you mean a little bit more about that. Give me a bit more of your meanings on freedom of American style.
Freedom of American style is make the things that the very so-called spiritual, religious laws that the American citizens follow and God we trust, they make the law of the land things in their own holy books that they say that's an abomination and a sin. They make those things legal to do.
Mm-hmm.
They make prostitution legal.
Oh, my.
They make same-sex marriage legal.
Mm-hmm.
Wherein in every other world outside of the human existing world, and only in the United States, mind you, only in the United States, is it the law of the land that people can say men can marry men and women can marry women, and that
okay.
they have the same right as any other? That's what I'm talking about, freedom of American style. Not the fact
okay.
that you can go to Las Vegas and gamble yourself away, or you can now gamble on TV, pay bets, where gambling is forbidden in all of the so-called religions or ways of living better, having a better life, and states are somewhat forced into doing this so they can get more money, revenue, to feed some outside sources, not doing nothing for the people, nothing.
Okay.
Our children are not getting quality education, so that's,
yeah.
You know, if that's kind of an idea what I'm talking about, freedom American style.
Excellent.
You know,
Yes, good. Okay, yeah, I got a little bit more clarity because I was thinking as I was hearing what most of our comments this evening, and I was more or less thinking about the success that we have made as Americans. I open up our remarks by saying that we made America the richest country in the world in which we did. But at the same time, we as African Americans are the richest African Americans in the entire world. We are, and especially today. So when I start thinking about, our celebration, Juneteenth, and of course the title of our show this evening was Juneteenth, and we bought in Black Belt Wall Street. The reasons for that is that the power of the American dollar, the power of the African American dollar, has been a powerful dollar regardless if we're making that power for ourselves as African Americans or if we've already made that power for our slave master or white Americans that have enslaved us and forced us into making them wealthy. So again, I started looking at the success as African Americans, regardless as to whether we made America the richest countries in the entire world, or whether we as African Americans are some of the most, are some of the highest income income peoples, income Africans, I put it that way, in the entire world. So I look at the, I look back, and I look at the success of African Americans, and like I said, that you start off with a. I start off with the business plan that was put together by Booker T. Washington and all of his associates, those who started Tuskegee Institution. Tuskegee and many of the African colleges that was started by African Americans back in those early times, and the business plans that they all put together, and when those business plans the Greenwood Business District called Booker T. Washington. And the professionals that worked with him, and they all went to the Greenwood Business District, and they put together a business plan for the African American nation. And that business plan, again, ran all the way from, again, where the Black Belt ran, all the way from Texas. But in this case, it didn't just stop in Maryland and Delaware and the South. It extended itself throughout the North as far off as, in this case, in the early days, as Connecticut, and as far west as Illinois and all into parts of Missouri. And so this business plan that they were able to put together and that was financed by the Greenwood Business District enable Black folks to realize their freedoms from and economics is what give the Black man his freedoms, because the Black man went from slavery, and from slavery, like we talk about the emancipation proclamation that was issued by Abe Lincoln, and of course Abe Lincoln ain't never thought about freeing any slaves. Abe Lincoln was about trying to save his Union, and by saving the Union, Abe Lincoln made a deal with both North and the South as to where he could please both, and in this case, the original deal was made is that, yes, we will free so many slaves, but we'll keep so many slaves as slaves in order to try to please both sides. So Abe Lincoln was about trying to save the Union more so than he was trying to free Black folks. But, like I said, I'm not looking at what Abe Lincoln or what any other white folks did as far as our freedom. I am looking at what we did to contribute it to our freedom. And, of course, it goes back again to economics. It always go back to economics. So, again, when it going back to economics, the business plan that our professional genius who put together a business plan that was financed by the Greenwood Business District. And of course, the Greenwood Business District was able to finance that business plan because we had the oil wells that we owned down there in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that was bringing us in the monies as to where we could finance and have our own bank in almost in every state that our business plans were incorporated. And there was, like I said, it was incorporated throughout the South and many parts of this country. And from that being able to finance our own business interests, now we when we started talking about freedom, because remember we went from emancipation that says you're free, but African Americans can leave the South because again they freed us, but they freed us without any kind of economics that we could advance on. And so therefore, if you, I'm free, but I don't even have monies to leave the plantation. I can't even make it to the next town. That's how broke I am. So again, that's what started to sharecropping. So we go right from freedom to sharecropping. And so, again, for almost another 100 years, we're into what is called sharecropping. And how do we get ourselves now out of this sharecropping? We bought ourselves out of sharecropping. Again, in the business plans that was put together by African Americans and was financed by African Americans, and all from the power of our own black dollars, started the migration, and that migration that was started is because we was able to pay off our sharecropping debts. And by being able to pay off our entire debts as to where white folks couldn't put surcharges on our debts every year, raising our debts as to where it would be impossible for us to pay off our debts, it was our business plans that was put together by Booker T. Washington and the Greenwood Business District, along with all the other professional business folks that work with Booker T. and the Greenwood Business District. African Americans working together is what we're talking about here. And those African Americans working together, again, we was able to have our own bank in our own communities. And by having our own banks in our own communities, now our deposits of monies were going into our own banks, and it was circulating in our own communities. Our deposits of our own monies not only created banks, but it created insurance companies. It created just about any type of financial institution that you will find in any other upscale community in America. African Americans had these businesses in their own communities. And again, and by having these businesses in our own communities, we started, and looking at our success. And I can start off with some of the early successful, very successful African Americans that started off during the time of Booker T. Washington and the Greenwood Black Belt Business Districts that was all put together. Some of the very successful businesses would go back to Marcus Garvey. We know how powerful and how successful the businesses that Marcus Garvey was able to achieve. But Marcus Garvey, where did he get his start? Where did he get his money? He got it from the Black Belt Business District that was put together by the business districts throughout the Southern, throughout the black communities, again, financed by the Greenwood business community out of Tulsa. He got his business started, and look how big his business became. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, again, his start also came from the Black Belt District. And look how big the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the success that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was able to have. Malcolm X, the Nation of Islam. All of this, again, is started by the Black Belt Business Districts. And I can go on and on. I mean many, many businesses that we can recognize. The Cotton Club. And like I said, just about every type of business that we can think of, including our own airports. And so you can see back during the time where our communities was in our own black communities, and our monies were circulating in our own black communities. And I think Sister Aisha was just talking about it. That was the time when we was the most powerfulest peoples in the, that was our most prosperous times, was during the time of segregation. It was after, it was when integration started. It was when integration started as to where the way we're living today and our way of living started, and this wasn't something that anybody imposed on us. The white man didn't impose our success, our successful way of life. He didn't impose that on us. No, the white man just simply said, after seeing our advancing so much, he now, and of course, we go out and our civil rights bill is passed. And once the civil rights bill is passed, we are now seeing that you can live wherever you you wish to live. And so integration stopped that large flow, cash flow, of monies that was flowing through our communities for so many years. Integration is what stopped the progress of our communities. Integration is what took away black folks living in their own black communities and want to live. And this is what I was asking you a few moments ago, Aziz, when you was talking about the American thing, but wow. It was all integration that took us to live, to move out of our own communities, to give up our lands, to give up everything, until today we have a situation where African Americans, and 2023 is predicted that we're going to spend in consumer spendings alone more than $1.9 trillion. That's almost $2 trillion, brothers and sisters. So, again, African Americans, we have the power. And we've been having that power for a long time. But we give away our power. We take it away from our own communities, take it to an integrated communities, and that integrated communities don't do nothing but just put the tricks to you, one trick right after another one, but never are you accepted. So, again, how long do we keep on saying that I want to be like my ex-slave master? I want to live in Mr. Charlie's house. I want to live the way Mr. Charlie lived. I want to live, be Mr. Charlie's next door neighbor. What is it that is so important by Mr. and Mrs. Charlie that we want to give up what has made us successful? Why can't we live it? Look at, you know, this was what made us successful. This is how our cash flow made us powerful. Why is it that we don't want to take that back? Why is it that we don't want to have that when it belongs to us? So, again, when I look at, again, the celebration of our freedom is for slavery as a celebration. But I also look at the disappointment of our economics, especially when you're bringing in so much monies, but we're 95% consumers. We are trillions of dollars we spend in someone else's store buying someone else's goods. And someone was talking about Imam W.D. Muhammad. Imam W.D. Muhammad, I pray that Allah bless him to be in paradise. He also talked about how, as African-Americans, how we have taken to sin because we have gotten into the habits of spending. I mean, it's almost like someone who goes to the casino and just became gambler so much until it has become a habit. And so again, when is it that we will correct what has made us successful and go back to that what has made us successful? When are we going to say that we know the black soil made America rich? We know we made the production that we put into the black soil made them filthy rich, but we have the black soil. When are we going to make that black soil make us rich? And now the situation has gotten so bad because of our integration, and we have neglected our own African-American communities until now we're losing those communities. So if we end up losing the communities, integrated communities don't have anything for you, where do you go from here? Again, Africa and African-Americans have so much in common, and now Africans and African-Americans are realizing just how much they have in common. I'm talking about going all the way back to slavery until today's living conditions, whether you're in Africa or whether you're in America. Neither one of them are in a very productive way for Africans or African-Americans because we're not in control of our own situation. We're not in control of what belongs to us. So when will the Africans and when will the African-Americans realize this and start taking back the control of what belongs to them? And this business of so even though we may be losing our communities here in the United States because of the integration that white folks, and the reason the white folks bringing these integrated folks, these are folks from all over the place and bringing them into this country, is because we're not productive to them anymore. We don't work in their black soil anymore. Therefore, if they're going to bring someone else in that they can still make cheap, they can have cheap labor, and they can make a lot of money. But as African-Americans, we ask ourselves, where do we go from here? As Africans, you ask yourself, where do we go from here? But we do know that if we, as African-Americans and as Africans, if we was to put our efforts together, because we still have Africa. Africa has not been taken over by immigrants. Africa still belongs to Africans. Africa still belongs to African-Americans. So again, brothers and sisters, we're celebrating our freedom of Juneteenth, but my goodness, when do we celebrate our true freedom, the freedom of success, the success that Almighty God has given us? We've always had it, but we've never been in control of it. Whether we give it up voluntarily or whether it's still being taken away from us because of a colonializing our peoples. So our mics are open, brothers and sisters. Those are just some of the comments that I have to make. But we open our mics, and I welcome your comments. Our mics are open. We welcome your comments.
Well, you know, Brother Bilal, this is Sister Aisha. Can you hear me?
Yes. Bilal?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. Indeed, I can.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, I have to reflect on some of the comments that you have just made and also the comment that Brother Aziz made earlier. Brother Aziz, I want to say I don't think Freedom American style pertains to the African American, because in order for us to have freedom, we have to not have these stereotypes of racism and that is predicated on the color of your skin and the social class that you come from. And I think when that concept of racism was put into the system to keep us divided, everything else went out the window. No such thing as Freedom American style for the African American. And we still, we did not start this concept of racism, but it was put out there in the society, and we were the group of people that were identified as the pawn of this concept of racism. And I think this is, and I'm sure this is the way that we are seen throughout America, associated with this concept of racism. And it doesn't matter how many laws that's put in place, it does not overshadow or erase the racist concept that America has for the African-American people.
So, for
us, I don't think as freedom and American style is for the other people. I think that we are still in this trap of being used as slaves to make more other people wealthy. And they dress it up every year or every 6 months. There is a change of the way it is dressed up and presented to us. But it is still
the old concept
of us being the slaves, being the workers, being the ones who constantly work every day and give everybody else our money and our resources. And even now, it's giving everybody else our intellect and our time and our degree of honesty. It seems like it's just tearing the fiber out of the African American. Our children are in a state of no people in another world, the country will believe the state of our children in education. And I heard recently how America is on the verge of losing its position as the number one country in education. It has already lost it on the elementary all the way through the master's, up to the master's degree. We are not number one in the world. And it makes it even more difficult for the African American, because our bachelor's degrees and some of our master's degrees are not even given that same recognition as a Caucasian degree, realizing they probably, in many cases, they know even less than we. So I'm going to give this concept, Freedom American style, a little more attention, Brother Aziz.
Yes.
But hearing it for the first time, this is the way I feel about it based on my understanding. Okay. Because racism is dominant, still dominant in America.
And I like your explanation there, Sister Aisha. I accept that as another way. Surely another way of suppressing us. And thank you for sharing that concept also.
Yeah. And Brother Bilal, I agree that after doing the time of segregation is when we made our greatest strive as a people, as a community of people, and as a nation of people coming together. We wanted to work together because of the circumstance, but we actually liked each other during segregation. I even wonder if we like each other now. You know, we criticize ourselves and our people far more than we criticize the Caucasian and the other people who are oppressing us. And I was raised during the time of segregation. And to be quite honest, I loved my childhood during segregation. I did not like my life as an adult during integration. I did not like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think we lost a lot of values that we had in our community. And we worked hard. So,
right.
Yes, we achieved, I think, one of the highest levels that we have ever had during the time of segregation, not during the time of integration. I think integration was unfortunately, when our leaders were talking about integration, they didn't use that word necessarily, integration, but when they were talking about equal rights, there was no model any place in the world that they could use or look at to see what this system of equality or integration would look like. There was no model that they could go to. And so they had to put it together based on the feelings and the desires that they had for the community. However, the people who controlled the whole system of integration, they had already designed the model. And they did it, of course, based on what was most appropriate for them. And we had to fit into that model. And I tell you frankly, I found integration to be the worst system that ever happened to me in my life. And I've heard other people say the same thing. So
sister,
I think it's, yes.
Don't mind me interjecting right there. How can it not be a perfect situation for our slave masters, or for those who will call them white supremacists? How can it not be when you start talking about almost $2 trillion in consumer spending, another $1 trillion or so going in to all our churches and masjids, and the amount of monies that we give white folks, why do you think that, if I was a white man, I would want you as close to me as I possibly could keep you. The last thing I want you to do is go back talking about being self-independent. Because
going back to Africa.
I am making so much money from you as white people, and I don't have to give you nothing. I don't even have to respect you. But nevertheless, you are making me, again, the richest peoples in the entire world. We made them the richest peoples in the entire world during our black soil days when we were slaves, and we're still making them the most richest peoples on the earth as we speak today and living in their integrated communities. And that's why I asked myself, when do we start, and you said that thing, maybe you were saying it right, when do we start liking each other well enough keep what belongs to us. And what belongs to us will make not only African Americans successful, but we can make Africa in because, see, it's the Africans today that are catching it when what we call during the time of segregation, it's the Africans that have no that the white man don't respect and making slaves out of today. But the African American, he don't have to make a slave out of us anymore. It looked like we just simply volunteered just to be integrated with it. But everything, all of our decisions is based on us. There is no one to stop us from doing anything we wish to do as far as being a successful people other than ourselves. So when do we take our own success, our God-given gifts, and take our blessings and be blessed with them? When? See, that's my disappointment. That's my disappointment in my communities or with my people, is because I know how powerful we are. I know how powerful we can become. But like you said, during our time of coming up, before 1965, let's put it that way. Before 1965, we loved each other. We looked after each other. No way would the white man been able to take our monies and treat us the way today. We refuse to have been treated that way, even though we didn't live as elaborate as we live today. But we own our communities, and we was unified. We loved each other. And like Brother Isaiah said, you didn't see no homelessness in the South.
You nope, didn't see no, that's true.
In the streets, didn't have nowhere to eat or nowhere to live, that just
right.
didn't make
yep.
But today it exists. Today, and I'm saying it's all... We have the power. When and how in the world can we use our power for our own success? Brothers and sisters, our mics are open. I need an answer. Our mics are open. Juneteenth has still got. We don't have a big audience tonight, but we have one. But whatever size audience we have, I don't care if it's 20 of us. Because you don't need large numbers. You don't need large numbers in order to bring about success in your communities. But again, when is there an example? Who is going to set the example? Because like I said, African Americans, we ain't never had this much money going on, even individually. African Americans, and some of us, they tell me, are worth individually almost $1 billion. African Americans. Many of us are worth $1 million. I was just thinking here, looking at our housing situation and the crisis that these white supremacists have us in, and I was just sitting there thinking, I think as early as today, I was thinking about the housing market. And the housing market is up so high. They had situations where, and this wasn't even here in Washington, D.C. This is out in, I think, somewhere in the South. Lady says she sold, and this is a white lady, says she sold her house for $475,000, because she wanted to take the advantage of her equity. But when she sold her house for and she said this was over a year ago she sold her house. She ain't been able to buy a house since of the equal value of what she sold, because the housing market has gone up so high. And like I said, this is not in expensive area like Washington, D.C. or something like that. This is in the average community.
Yeah.
Where you $475,000 and you may not be able to buy a house. So, and that, if that's the case, and this is the average house, what happens when you buy yourself an upscale house, a quality house? That house is going to cost you pretty close to $1 million. And I'm saying to myself,
absolutely, that's yeah.
But I'm saying to myself, the houses start selling for $1 million, guess who is going to own them? African American.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying that's the kind of monies we have. But when are we going to get away from the exploitation of just being robbed? When? Economic,
well,
brother. Go right ahead, sister.
I think when is when we stop trying to imitate the former slave master.
Thank you.
That's when.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do. The styles, the fashions, the cars, the thinking, the language is imitating the slave master. If we continue as a people to find our individual self-worth entwined with the appearance of the slave master, we're continuing to go down. We won't make progress. We did not use them as a standard for us during segregation.
Nope.
Actually, we constantly would say we don't want to be like them, because we knew them. We didn't want to be like them. But what we did, one mistake we had a slogan throughout our communities all over the U.S., I do believe. And that slogan was, when we started, our parents and grandparents, well, our parents started getting these jobs. Our parents said, I want for my child what I didn't have for myself, what I didn't have.
Right.
Which was a terrible thing that we did. That was a terrible slogan, and the slogan caused us to start raising these spoiled kids who had no respect for the value and the hard work of their parents. They just wanted, and we gave. And that was a mistake we made, you know?
Yeah.
So, and now that generation, they have kids. And in most cases, they have just left the kids to the television and to the, you know, to their little finger computer, because they don't have time to spend with the kids because they are still trying to make it. Or they've actually lost interest. It's too much of a burden. And many parents are saying their children are too much of a burden for them, you know. So we made some mistakes along the way. And I think that we're going to have to practice changing our mentality and the way we think about things and forgiving ourselves and moving forward in the right way, because we're on a terrible path of continued failure, and it's getting worse. You know?
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you one thing. Yeah. And Brother Razi started out talking about it. that is this celebration. Yes, I am for celebrating our freedom. I am for celebrating our freedom. But I am not mm-hmm. for celebrating our freedom to the point where I'm ready to give a picnic. No. See what I'm saying? That's where, and I agree with Brother Aziz, and I agree with anybody else who thinks like this. Our getting out here talking about getting drunk and having a party, and here you're talking about the end of the most horrific event that could ever happen to a human being. And yeah. we went for about, and I'm saying ain't no sense to say we went for three or four. We've been here for 500 years and we've been in slavery for 500 years. We're still in slavery. It is just not yep. so direct, but now, but this, so this business of celebrating our freedom, yes, I'm for that all day long, and I think that because, again, we put so much into freedom. We put so much into being Americans. We put so much into our democracy. We paid more of a price for this democracy than the average Caucasians, because many of the Caucasians in this country are Europeans. They migrated here. They're not true Americans. They never paid the cost for these United States. They just came here and appreciated the fruit of the land. And of course, they was invited here because white folks are for other white folks, but as far as the true Americans, who are more true of American than an African American? The African American today is probably more of a true of American than the Native American, because the Native Americans didn't do nothing but just give up, simply give up, just gave up. And tell white folks that 100 years ago they could have anything they want from them, and they're telling white folks today you can still have anything you want for it. We as African Americans who have put in, who have paid the cost. Sometimes we had to fight, for our freedom, and sometimes our politics. Who is more into politics? To keep the politicians, the Democrats, and the Republicans, and the white independents, who is are keeping them more in check as far as their political fairness than the African American? No one is any more patriotic to this country than the African American. So again, this is our country. But again, when do we start taking what belonged to us? Rather than playing our dig on this head, the Uncle Tom's role. And I hate to say the Uncle Tom's role, because we know Uncle Tom was somebody to be proud of when you really want to know the history of Uncle Tom. So again, and I say that because she looked at somebody like a Donald Trump, who is a perfect example of what Caucasians are all about when it comes to this country. And like I said, they have no loyalty to this country because they are not Americans. They don't care whether America rise or fall. As long as they can get everything they want from it, use and abuse, That's what they in America for. But as far as their patriotism, how can you be a patriot of life, liberty, and justice, when you have someone that you say was the president of your country, and this man has 37 felony counts against him, and all of them are espionage charges. And millions of white folks are saying, we don't care. So again, and the white folks don't care. But there are Americans that do care. And most of those, the majority of Americans that do care are African Americans. Why? We proved that by the last election. If it wasn't for African Americans, Donald Trump would be our president right now. So the question now, Donald Trump got smart. Donald Trump got smart. He said, okay, let me go ahead and call in our boys, our and then he has all kinds of black folks. You see them all out here with Trump signs. Donald Trump, black man.
The ones who got the money.
And here's a
black entertainers.
And here's a man who, when it comes to freedom, justice, and freedom, justice, and our pursuit of happiness, he don't give a darn about anything like that. But here it is, we as African Americans have given up so much on your own freedom, your own justice, and your own equality. You've given up, and you're saying, I am going to adjoin and make my slave master put him back in charge, even if it means that I will go back to slavery. You know, I get confused. So this Juneteenth, I wonder, where are we really as African Americans when it comes to our freedom? Where are we? And do we not realize that these white supremacists want you back in the fields right out there with the rest of the immigrants? Because that's what they want us to be. They want us to be just like the immigrants that are coming over here, and they want us working for slave wages so we can't drive around, so we can't buy a $1 million house. I had a client one time, a pretty wealthy African American, was doing a rollover with me, and I remember our discussion, and one of the things I never forget is telling me, he said, Bynum, you don't know racism until you're a wealthy black man. You don't know racism until you're a wealthy black man, because once you're a wealthy black man, that's when the real hate comes at you. They don't want this kind of success. And see, when you're a wealthy black man, you are a minority. And as a minority, a rich minority, you're hated more than the field hand. You're hated much more than the average wage employee. You're hated much more than the average African American. You're hated because you are the epitome of success and black power. So the worst thing that can happen to African Americans is being able to afford and to live. I mean, after all, look at the destruction of Black Wall Street. Why do you think Black Wall Street was hated and demolished and destroyed? Because African Americans showed that they're just as good or better than white folks, and because of that, white folks killed them. That's the kind of hate that we as African Americans are living in this country. And that hate has never left. So, Juneteenth and our celebration, yes, we should be celebrating, but we need to be celebrating in the right way. But this thing we having picnics and we all going to get drunk, and then not only that, guess who you're having your picnics and getting drunk with? And guess who is making the money from you having your picnics and getting drunk? White folks. Monday is a holiday. Guess who's going to make all the monies on our holiday this Monday? Guess who's going to make millions and trillions of dollars? White folks. What kind of celebration is that? So again, our mics are open. We got about 15 more minutes. And so mics are open, brothers and sisters. Like I said, I didn't know I was going to get so engrossed into this conversation. But like I said, and I guess it's because I'm a financial planner. I believe in accumulating wealth. I believe in owning your assets and making your assets work for you. I believe in owning and keeping my assets and my values. That's a celebration for me. But this business of I am going to celebrate because I am going to make my slave master, who is already, I've already made rich, and he's never shown any appreciation for it. Now I'm going to make him even more, I'm going to make him even richer, even wealthier. No, that's not my type of celebration, brothers and sisters. But like I said, I know that's from my business background. So again, our mics are open. We welcome your comments, brothers and sisters. I didn't mean to take up so much of the time, but I guess I just got something off my chest. Our mics are open. We welcome your comments.
Well, it's always necessary for us to talk about where we are and have an understanding, so we have no confusion in our mind, or we need to not try to extend our imagination to think that we're in the same place as a group of people, as the ruling class people. We are not. And if we continue to think that way, then our population of young people are going to continue to decrease. The numbers will decrease, and the incidents that they get involved in trying to live up to a standard that is not even realistic and does not even reflect them, that's the crucial part. When we look at what's happening to our young people in the school systems, their education level is so low, they can't compete. Rational thinking is not encouraged. It is pretty much you just come up with the answer, or you look in your technology that you have, and you come up with an answer, and it'll give you what you need to know. So many of these things, we're going to have to reassess. And I know it's difficult, and it's much easier sometimes for us to pretend and to escape the issue, because we're so burdened in this society now with everything that's happening in the environment. But if we don't take the time to reassess where we are and look at our family structure, we are not going to survive, and our families will not survive. And so we're going to have to change the way we do some things. And I think on this Juneteenth and the next Juneteenth and the ones going into history, that we take time to reflect. on where we were and where we are now and where it looks like we're going. And rethink this situation with our families. So this is what I would like to leave to the people who are, and I'm one of them, who will be celebrating Juneteenth. But not, I won't be celebrating it for the purpose of just being under the law of slavery, because we are still enslaved mentally. I will celebrate it truly when I can say I have freed my mind and I have contributed to my family coming out of slavery in, from the mindset that we are currently in as a people.
Absolutely.
All right, so again, we're going to still open our mics and see if there is any comments from any of our listeners. We welcome your comments. Our mics are open. That's our statement. Our mics are open. We welcome your comments. Okay, in that case, Brother Aziz, I'm getting ready to come back to you now because we got 10 minutes. And so we're going to go into our closing remarks by our directors. Brother Aziz, you can start. Sister Aisha can come behind you. And that should give me time enough to close the station out. So, Brother Aziz, we welcome your closing comments. It's towards Juneteenth and Black Belt Wall Street and where we go from here.
Yes, I just wanted to let our listeners know that we do hope that when they celebrate Juneteenth, they take in mind, as our former speaker, Sister Aisha, said, take in mind where we are, what we're doing, where we're going to go, where we're going to go after that in the future. And I also wanted to say that to our listeners that we had a very good conversation tonight and shared some very good information that I think all our listeners should enjoy and have learned something from what we said tonight. So thank you both, Brother Bilal and Sister Aisha, for your contributions tonight.
Yes, I want to thank our listening audience, although we didn't get much response from them tonight. But please just chime in on the and make your comments, because we don't capitalize on any particular comments from ourselves. And we want to be a part of a community of minds. And it takes all of us to put our thoughts and our feelings and our understanding and our intellect together so we can move forward. Because we are not moving forward as a people, we are taking steps backwards. So hopefully this Juneteenth, we will do some reflection. Inshallah. Thank you so much.
Brother Bilal. I want to thank our two directors for their comments. Thank our listeners. Brothers and sisters, this is the Black Belt Wall Street, and we want to take this time and say that, you see, this is why we have kept this show on the air now for 8 years. Because we talk about business. Sometimes we talk about politics. And we talk about the disaster of both of them. Business, politics, and natural disasters. Because we are confronted with all three of them as we speak. And if there is not informative information for those of you who aren't considering business, politics, and natural disasters because you may not have the the experience or the know-how to consider these things than those of us who are experts. We're on this station and we bring on other experts, but we look forward to bringing on experts as to where we can share information in our communities to those of you who may not be privileged to receive good informative information because it's just not in your community. Then New Africa, Black Belt Wall Street, and all of the directors that work with New Africa, Black Belt Wall Street, we continue to bring this show on because we've asked many, many times because we know our membership is not nearly as high as we think it should be, but that's not a deterrent for us. We know that what we have to talk about is bigger than your membership, although we need your memberships because, again, without numbers, we do not exhibit any power. Numbers, human numbers is what brings on power and it brings on respect. So, brothers and sisters, we want your memberships. We need your memberships. So we ask that you go to the New Africa Business Association. No, I'm sorry. You go to the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association New Africa Business Association .com. Our New Black Belt New Africa Business Association .org, either one, and go to our website. Look at the many programs that we have on our website. We have a shopping center. Our shopping center and our audience that are listening to us, our audience is right here in the United States and just about many parts of the world because of our endurance of being on this station and the conversations that we're talking about. We're heavily being listened to in Africa. That's probably our biggest foreign country listeners in all of the many parts of the world. Is our biggest listeners are our African brothers and sisters, and one of the big responders that we get from any nation is countries in Africa. So, and there are many, many, and that's opening up many, many business opportunities that we have available to us because we are within communications. We have a line of communications with each other. So go to Black Belt Wall Street Business Association.com and but don't forget to go to our membership department and don't forget to become a member. Until next week, this time, enjoy your Juneteenth. And,
if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? your brother's woman friend, and share with black folks not of kin. People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher,
who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brother?